I guess this show is a little bit of a hodgepodge because my mind's kind of in a hodgepodge today because there's been so many people that have been contacting me about, it seems that what we're going through right now is an awakening period. And people are looking around. It's like, I guess, Rip Van Winkle or something, you know, all of a sudden they're looking around and they're asking questions and they're getting stuck on their hang-ups, you know, of who they are, the Native Americans, the Cherokee, you know. I'm especially saying Cherokee because I've been dealing more with the Cherokee with the mound builders, but in this area, but it's like they're getting hung up on the problems that occurred. And like you said, now is the time to forget about that and go on. But with the Cherokee medicine way, we have to. It's a spiritual thing too. Not only the medicine, you know, we have to learn how to heal our spirit and become get away from discrimination, boxing in of, you know, hatred, you know. Yeah. And I'm finding that a lot with Native Americans right now, that there's, you know, I don't know if it's just who I'm dealing with or what, but you know, it's like they're not wanting to reach out, you know, and grow forward. I love. There's so much hate for the whites and what they did, I guess.
Well, there is, and there's, you know, it's interesting that we've had this period take place where there's been this really major change.
Uh-huh.
And the, I don't know, I guess the, it gets kind of to be kind of an interesting mess to look at when you have a whole bunch of people who've made a commitment to a higher spiritual path.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden things get real uncomfortable, and when they get uncomfortable, then they try to go back to where they were before.
Okay.
Where it wasn't uncomfortable. But the problem is, once you've made the decision, you put the intent out there, you really can't go back.
No, you can't.
Well, it's kind of like if someone does a vision quest. The vision quest doesn't begin when you put them out on the hill. The vision quest begins at the moment they make the determination to do the vision quest.
Okay.
So, you know, their spiritual process is underway at that point. And I try and get people, like, they commit for a vision quest, I'm trying to get them to do it, like, a year away.
Uh-huh.
Because they will go through so much stuff in the process. Like, we have two stones that we have people use to work on things. And certainly anyone who is going through these processes right now, these will be good stones for them to use. One is called selenite, and the other is called septarian. And selenite and septarian are two of the master stones. There are four of them, selenite, septarian, and kyanite, and citrine. And
Do you think we should spell those for the listeners?
Well, septarian is S-E-P-T-A-R-I-A-N.
S-E-P-T-E-R-I-E-N.
I-A-N.
I-A-N.
And then selenite is C-E-L-E-N-I-T-E.
C-E-L-E-N-I-T-E.
Uh-huh. And kyanite is K-Y-A-N-I-T-E.
K-Y-A-N-I-T-E. N-I-T-E. Okay.
And citrine is C-I-T-R-I-N-E.
C-I-T-R-I-N-E.
Uh-huh. And just to give you a quick rundown of what these stones do, selenite is a stone that we use to release all of the ancient mysteries of the earth into people. And there's a specific process you go through with that. we have real fun doing it out here because we have White Sands National Monument out here. And the white sand dunes out here are nothing but sand that's been ground down from selenite by the wind. You know, so it's an immensely powerful place. And then we have, but we use it with Septarian because Septarian, what it does is it shows you the dramas that are holding you back in your life. And all you have to do is you rub your hands together and get your energy flowing, and you hold a piece of Septarian in your hand and you charge it for the purpose of showing you those dramas that are holding you back. And then you hold it in your receptive hand and allow that energy to flow into you, and it won't take long, and it'll start showing you something, some behavior that you do that is holds you back from accomplishing the things that you should be able to in this life.
You might want to tell the people what how to find your receptive hand.
Okay, if you lace all of your fingers together from both hands and make sort of a double fist, then you're going to have one thumb that is naturally on top. And that hand is your dominant hand. That's the hand that actually sends the most energy. There's a whole bunch of stuff in the New Age movement that's just flaky as hell, and one of the things that they do is say that your right hand is your dominant hand and your left hand is your receptive hand. Well, that's not necessarily true. Okay, it's true for me, but that's just me. There are other people who, if they lace their hands together, their left thumb is going to wind up being the one that's naturally on top, and if they try and switch it around and change all their fingers around, it's going to be uncomfortable to do.
Uh-huh.
So the thumb that's natural on top is the dominant hand. That's the one that sends the most energy out from your body. And then the receptive hand is the one that receives the most energy. So you hold your Septarian in your receptive hand and ask the spirit of the stone to, and we address all stones as grandfather. And so you ask the spirit of the stone to show you, the first drama that you need to deal with that's holding you back in your life. And then after you've gotten that information, write it down, whatever you need to do, then you take a piece of selenite and charge it up also. And then with your dominant hand, you hold it on the top of your head at your crown chakra and allow that energy to flow. And you ask the grandfather spirit of that stone to show you the way out of the drama. In other words, how to get over it. And the information will come to you. Now, sometimes after you've done this, it can be a little nerve-wracking because you've just realized something pretty major about yourself that's not necessarily pretty. So, that's where the other two master stones get real handy. And kyanite is real fun. I like to use kyanite anytime when I do any type of energetic attunement on someone, whether it's Reiki or whatever, and have them hold it. In that case, I have them hold it between their thumb and index finger on their receptive hand, because it's usually, you can get it in pretty flat pieces. I've got a piece that's about 2 inches long and about half an inch wide, and I'll just have them hold it in there. And it's fairly thin, it's maybe a quarter inch thick, but you can get really large pieces if you just tap it with a hammer, it'll come apart. And you take, what it does is it balances all of your bodies, your physical body, your mental etheric, your astral etheric, your astral body, your spiritual body, your higher self. It balances and aligns all of those bodies. And it also properly opens and balances all of your chakras simply by holding it. That's not too shabby. That's a real good one just to carry around with you sometimes.
Well, I was thinking about maybe making like a necklace out of a pendant.
Yeah, that would be good. Because it would always be in your energy and it would always be doing that for you. And I like to do it with attunements because it makes the attunement so much stronger. It's just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the citrine is real fun. Citrine basically is great for people with addictions in general because it helps break the addiction. But what the main thing is that it does is it causes people to function in truth, even when they don't want to. There have been more than a few occasions when I've been working with people, you know, and addicts are people who are hiding from truth. It doesn't matter what you're addicted to. You know, you can be addicted to sugar, you can be addicted to caffeine or cigarettes or drugs or whatever. You're hiding from something with it. And the citrine makes them face their truth. So, there, you know, all these stones are good. And a lot of times when people have this situation where some major trauma has been revealed to them, that they just have a real hard time dealing with the fact that they actually do this to themselves. And having a little citrine to hang on to continually face that truth until they've dealt with it is a good thing. And with all four of these stones, they do not pick up negative energy.
They don't? So you don't have to
cleanse them? They do not. You never have to cleanse them.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask that.
Yeah, they're master stones. You never have to cleanse them.
Now, you could get like one of these little medicine pouches too, right? And and just put the I would imagine the kyanite.
Yeah, you can put any of these things in there and stuff. Now, if you want to make a medicine bag, that's a different process and stuff. It's actually easy to do. The you know, you get your neck bag that you're going to make it out of, and basically, you know, smudge it. And I like to use things like, you know, sage and cedar and sweet grass and lavender and things of that nature, and a little dragon's blood and echinacea to intensify things and get the smoke coming up and put the screen all through it, the bag through it, and then open up the bag real good and let it get in there and blow some of the smoke into it with my breath. Because that puts some of my essence in there too. And then I'll put whatever it is that I want to have in the bag. Like one of my favorites is wolf fur. The wolf is pathfinder. Helps you find where you're supposed to go in life and stuff. So invariably I'll put something like that in there, and I'll put a whole variety of stones in there. Normally, if you keep stones together without them being wrapped up individually in red cloth or something to protect their energy, then they'll just kind of bleed together and become kind of weak. But you can charge a medicine bag in such a way that that's not a problem. And so after you put whatever stones or herbs or whatever in there, and I like to put buckeye in there because buckeye is basically our good luck in general, and they also help relieve joint pain. It's real fun to use with elders who have arthritis problems and stuff because their joint pain goes away and they just love it. Yeah. But you put all this stuff in there and then rub your hands again and have that bag folded in between your hands and charge it with the intent that everything that is either put in that bag or on that bag will work to its highest capability, both corporately and individually. You know, so whether it needs to, if it needs to do something separately, it will. If it needs to do it, you know, in conjunction with other things, it will. But they won't lose anything in the process. So basically, it's like you have armored each stone to do what it needs to do and be protected from being harmed in any way by anything else.
Okay, and again, how do you keep them from bleeding together?
Well, normally you would do it by wrapping a red cloth around each type of stone separately. Like you might have five or six different pieces of citrine and one red cloth, and you know, a piece of, you know, you really wouldn't need to do citrine because, you know, it's master stone, but let's say a piece of bloodstone. You know, you might have five or six pieces of bloodstone wrapped up. You might have, you know, in one group, you might have some pyrite in another, some topaz in another. You could have the stones of all the same type together, but not stones from other things. There are a lot of places around the United States where you go into these places where you know, like places for travelers to stop on the road and whatnot. They'll have these big bunches of polished stones all poured in together that you can sort through and get what you want. And number one, they're damaged by the polishing process, and number two, they are damaged by the fact that they've all been poured in there together and their energies have bled all into each other. So that's why, you know, in the earth you don't see stones growing all mixed up.
No.
they're each in their own place. So.
But okay, so is there now
energetically you do it by putting the energy in and commanding that this be so, that they be able to work both corporately and individually to their highest capability.
Okay.
And then you wear your back.
So you just energetically ask them to work on their own.
Right. Both on their own and individual. And you know, you can put all kinds of things in a medicine bag. You can put things like that. You can put essential oils, you know, and you can do whatever you want to do.
Well, how would a person know what was best for them?
Well, each person can know what's best for them simply by going to a rock shop or something, or some place where there are stones that are there that attract them, like maybe in a spring bed or something like that. And you pick up some little stone, and hold it in your receptive hand, and ask if that stone is one that you need in your medicine bag. And if it is, you'll have this real feeling of well-being and stuff. Or you can hold it at your solar plexus and ask it. And if it's a good thing for you, then there will be this opening, expanding feeling within you. And if not, then things will tighten up, sometimes even to the point that you're cramped.
And the solar plexus located where?
Solar plexus. The solar plexus is right at the base of the sternum.
Okay.
The top of the gut, bottom of the sternum.
Okay.
There's a little notch in there where there's kind of a curve in the ribs there.
Now, you said that you would put all these different types of herbs together and burn them to create a smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And then run the medicine bag through that smoke, and then gather some of that smoke in your mouth, and then blow it into the bag, right?
You don't have to gather it in your mouth. You can just open up the bag and blow it into it.
Oh, okay. Open it. Okay. And what type of herbs did you say again?
Sage, cedar, sweetgrass, and lavender.
Sage, cedar,
sweetgrass. You see, plants all have different qualities and stuff. Like there's sage is a male plant,
uh-huh.
So a cedar for that matter. And they work to purge negative energy. And cedar also puts protective energy with it too.
Uh-huh.
They're warrior plants.
Uh-huh.
And then sweetgrass and lavender are feminine plants, and they bring in positive energy.
Uh-huh.
So, they focus positive energy in with whatever you put it with. So, you're cleansing the negative, bringing in the positive, and protecting it.
And then you just find the certain stones that you feel comfortable with that talk
yeah.
to you.
Mm-hmm.
To put
yeah,
it in.
Stones or herbs or whatever. Yeah. And, like, I make medicine bags for people.
Uh-huh.
And we'll send them to them, and when I do, I always tell them, you get one thing or more. You put all whatever you want to in there, but you get something that you put in that bag that makes it strictly your own. So if you ever get a medicine bag from someone else, you always, always put something in it that the person who made it for you doesn't know what it is, and you never tell anyone what it is.
Uh-huh.
And that does two things. Number one, it'll subtly change the energy and make it more yours. And number two, it preserves your spiritual autonomy.
Okay. I can do that.
Uh-huh.
I can keep that secret. Okay. So
if you ever make a mistake and don't, then
switch it.
Then put something else in there. Yeah.
And it seems like one of the stones, or should you have all four of the master stones in there?
It's entirely up to you.
Well, it seems to me that the one that a person should really keep in there would be the kyanite and the citron. Of course, the selenite works good too, huh?
Yeah, I like selenite for another purpose. You can take... you need to get someone else to do this with you, and You know, sometimes it makes people uncomfortable, but as you probably figured out by now, I don't care about that. It's best if this situation is done nude. Uh-huh. And you have the person lay face down on a table, like a massage table or something that kind of gets them up a little bit where you can get to them easily.
Uh-huh.
And the person who's going to be doing the work then wraps her hands together, gets her energy flowing, folds that selenite in there, blows into it to put their essence with it and stuff, and asks the grandfather spirit of the stone how many breaths they need to use for each chakra to transmit the ancient mysteries into this person. And then starting at the root chakra, which is like between the legs at the perineum, you hold the stone there, so you're going to have to spread the legs a little bit, and just, you know, stick the stone there and put your dominant hand over to allow the energy to flow. You don't have to get real friendly and touch them and all that stuff. Just get the stone there. And when they do it, then they need to have their dominant hand on the stone and their receptive hand facing up. And a real good way to do it is just kind of put it at a comfortable place, you know, kind of like between your waist and your shoulder, with your hand, you know, out flat facing up, and your arm bent and stuff. But have the armpit kind of open, because your body is, when it comes to transmitting energy, is kind of like a water hose. If you bend it real sharp, it cuts off the flow of water in the hose, but you open it up a little bit and the water starts to flow again.
Uh-huh.
Well, it's the same thing with energy. And so you have your dominant hand over the stone at the root chakra, and your other hand, you know, out with, you know, both your armpits kind of open and stuff. And you tighten up your own perineum. And perineum is also known as the Peyronie's long line. It's a little bitty muscle right in between a man's scrotum and anus, or a woman's vagina and anus. It's about a 16th of an inch wide. In Chinese medicine, you have conception vessel 1 on the front of it, and then that 16th of an inch away, you have governing vessel 1. And they recognize this as the point that controls all of the energy in the body. So you tighten that up. It's kind of like, there are a lot of women who have done Kegeling exercises after they've had a child.
Uh-huh.
Well, it's the same thing with the Kegeling exercise, only instead of releasing it, you just hold it tight. And then you also put your tongue right up against the back of your upper front teeth. And this will bring energy equally from the universe at large and from the earth to mix within you. So you have a mixture, a balanced mixture of masculine and feminine energy rolling through you, and then going out through your dominant hand, through the stone, into the other person. And you ask in the process when you're charging the stone how many breaths you should use, and it's going to be either 4 breaths or 7 breaths. Now, the way you do this breathing is you'll breathe in through your nose. Assuming you don't have sinus problems, it's the best way is to breathe in through your nose. And until you get a full breath, and you count, you know, like, you know, count the seconds or whatever until you've gotten all the breath in you that you can, and then you hold for half of that time, and then you breathe out for the full count and hold for half that time, and that's 1 breath. You know, so, well, let's say you breathe in to a count of 8, then you would hold it for 4 and breathe out for 8, hold it for 4. And the more you do it, it gets to where you can, your lungs expand more and more, and you'll be able to get in more and more air, and so the count will actually become longer. And, but, you know, really don't push it until, you know, when you first get started in this type of breathing and stuff. But it's called a rhythmic breath. So, you know, a full however many counts in, 8, 10, 12, whatever, and then hold for half of that. And so let's say you breathe in for 9, okay? You know, that's not an even number. Uh-huh. Then you're going to hold for 5, and breathe out for 9, and hold for 5, and then when you get to where you can breathe in for 10 counts, then you'll breathe in for 10 and hold for 5 still, and breathe out for 10 and hold for 5. And so you do either the 4 or the 7 breaths at the root chakra, and then you move the stone up to the sacrum, which is that flat piece of bone right at the base of the spine.
Uh-huh.
And you do the same process there. And then you're going to go to, and that's kind of an interesting one. That takes in both the stomach chakra and what's known as the base chakra, which is one of the sub-chakras. And so, then from there you go up to where you're right behind the solar plexus.
And you're breathing on each time that you move it from one place to the other, you do
right.
The breathing?
Yeah, you do however many breaths that the spirit of the Sulanite told you to do at the beginning.
Uh-huh.
And then you just keep working up, you know, on the back, on each of the chakras until you get to where you're holding it on their crown chakra, which, you know, is up at the head. Now, one thing that's different is, instead of doing it right behind, like on the back of the head, right behind where the third eye would be, the brow chakra,
uh-huh.
Then you hold it at the base of the occipital lobe, which is, you know, is like where the skull and the spine meet. And that's where you do it for the brow chakra.
Uh-huh.
Then you do the crown chakra. And then after that, then there's a process that sometimes a person will need help with. But you can go through it. Remember, it is in starting with the base chakra, with the root chakra, rather than, you know, the person should stick it between their legs and hold it there and allow the energy to flow. And ask that master stone to show you the ancient mysteries for the root chakra. And you know, you've got to warn people a little bit, because sometimes it's a little on the crude side, usually very sexual, and you know, real earthy kind of rituals and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And when things have come through on how to achieve certain things with those rituals, and then you move it there, you know, up to the sacrum, you know, from the base and stomach chakras, and you get the information and stuff for that, and then you can get it up to where usually you can hold it yourself behind the solar plexus and get whatever information you can there, and usually you'll have to get somebody to hold it over your heart chakra for you, and then you can hold it for the others yourself. And in doing so, then you will get a series of rituals. Sometimes you might have to do this several days on one before you get everything. And but you'll get a series of rituals for yourself, for each of the chakras. And then when something comes up that you need something or someone else needs something, you can know it's there.
Now, what stone? Okay, now, we're talking about... There's two people involved in this, right?
Two people involved in this, yeah.
Okay.
One is putting the energy, is allowing energy to flow through them and through the Sulanite into you to put these ancient mysteries into you.
Okay. So you lay a person face down.
Yeah.
And then you do this process. And when you're using this process, the stone that you're using on that person...
Is the Sulanite.
Now the healer, okay, the therapist,
right.
Whatever, are they holding Sulanite as well?
No, they are holding the Sulanite at each of the chakras.
Okay, they just do it then, okay?
Yeah.
They don't have any other rocks in their hands whatsoever,
no.
Any stones, okay.
No. And in fact, you know, when I say, you know, that they both need to be nude, they need to have nothing on.
Uh-huh.
No glasses, you know, no hearing aids, no rings, no nothing. Just their bodies.
So take, so girls take out your pierced earrings.
Pure energy.
So girls take out your pierced earrings. Well, I guess guys, too. Take out your pierced earrings.
Yeah.
Any hairpins, anything. Well, it's the same way when you do, what is that, an MRI.
Uh-huh.
You know, they'll ask you to take off, you know, your earrings, everything, you know.
Yeah, because it interferes with the energy.
Yeah. To me, it's so amazing how these stones work, because I don't think that we give them the credit due, you know. I think that we all think of stones as just rocks. you know.
Because these stones were invented first in the earth. And everything has a spirit. So stones were invented first, then plants, then animals, then us. We're the new kids on the block.
Uh-huh.
Now, the, so stones have some really amazing qualities, like, let's say someone has, you know, blood problems, like hepatitis, okay? That's a blood problem. It's a blood disease.
Yeah.
Or malaria is a blood disease. Or hemophilia. Or, you know, they have, you know, low iron or too much iron or whatever. Those are blood problems. Mm-hmm. Or they have problems with their liver. You can take bloodstone and use it. You know, like, I like to carry bloodstone with me anyway. When I'm just driving down the road, if I see a wreck or something somewhere,
uh-huh.
and I get to these, and I'm there when it happens or close to it, and the medics are a long way away and stuff, and if someone has what's obviously a hemorrhage and they can bleed to death internally,
yeah.
a lot of people get hemorrhages, abdominal hemorrhages, from seatbelts.
Yeah.
It might save their life, but still they've got this hemorrhage that could ultimately kill them.
Yeah.
All you have to do is take a piece of bloodstone. You don't have to charge it or anything. Just set it on the on top of the place on their body where the hemorrhage is, uh-huh. and it'll stop the hemorrhage.
It's so amazing.
Yeah. You know, if you have people with massive problems with fear or stuff like that, like people with Parkinson's disease. Parkinson's disease, the people who have them have just multiple phobias, major phobias. And there's a process you can do with malachite to get rid of all fear. You know, malachite's a real nice little greenish stone and stuff, and light green, looks like it kind of has a swirling of colors and stuff in it. And there's several ways you can use it. Like, my favorite with people who are dealing with fear in general is to have them write out a list of all of the things that they're afraid of. It's amazing how long those lists can get.
I'm afraid of heights.
Okay, that is one thing that you're afraid of, and it's probably related to some other fears.
Yeah.
So, that's the thing, is you make the list. And then, what you do is, you take a little piece of malachite that's small enough that you can carry it in your pocket, but large enough that you can put it in your mouth and not have too much of a danger of swallowing it.
Uh-huh.
And so you take a bowl of water and you set it by your bed and put just two or three little grains of salt. You never want to use more salt than just two or three grains of salt in some water with stones to purify them or something, because otherwise it'll kind of eat up their etheric body and put holes all through it. And so you put your malachite in there, and in the morning when you wake up, you take your piece of malachite and you put it in your mouth, and you take the biggest fear on your list, you know, whatever, the one that's most all-encompassing of several others and stuff that you have, and you think about this fear, and you do this process for a week. For 10 minutes, you think about this fear and how it has debilitated your life. And, you know, this is just for the first couple of days, how it has held you back in your life, and how good your life is going to be without it. And you visualize, you daydream about the change it's going to make when you are able to get rid of this fear.
Uh-huh.
And for the next 3 days, you visualize how good it is that you are getting rid of this fear. And the change that it's making in your life, as in you're responding to things in a different way, and you see this, you daydream about it. And you see, you know, if you think about things, that's just dealing with your conscious mind. If you daydream about it, there's pictures there. Then it deals with your subconscious mind.
Uh-huh.
And you have the energy of the malachite that's involved in it. And then for the last couple of days of the week, you think about how good it is to be rid of this fear and visualize the wonderful change that's taking place by being rid of it. Now, as you go through your day, you know, once you get through sucking on it for 10 minutes, put it in your pocket, carry it around with you through the day, and that night, put it back in that bowl of water by your bed.
Huh.
And so you do each one for a week, and at the end of that first week, you'll be able to cross off that one major fear and usually several others in your list.
Uh-huh.
And then you go on to the next big one. And you just kind of move through the list until there's nothing left. Now, I did this with a lady who had Parkinson's disease, and I was doing some other work with her, too. I'd do some energy work. I'd do a little Reiki, do a little acupressure, and, some of the instead of high healing process and stuff. And a little bit with her every week. She didn't have any money because she was too afraid to go out and work.
Uh-huh.
And she said that she would pay me when it was over with and stuff. I thought, well, that's fine, whenever, whatever, it'll all work out in the end. So, went on. Well, at the end of things, I guess we'd been working on it about 5 months, and I went there one day and she said, I'm not afraid of you. I'm going, well, Carol, you were never supposed to be afraid of me. It's fine, And she said, well, not only am I not afraid of you, but I'm not going to pay you. I don't need you anymore. And she closed the door in my face.
What?
I'm like, yeah, she definitely got over it.
Really?
I'm sure she had her own little karmic problems down the line from that. But, she was definitely over her fear. She was afraid of everybody. She was scared to death the first time I walked in there. She was willing to do whatever it took to get over the disease, but she was afraid. And she just got to where she wasn't afraid of anything anymore. So now that doesn't mean that you will do stupid things, like if you're afraid of heights right now.
Yeah.
You'll still be respectful of the fact that if you fall, you could get killed.
Yeah.
Be careful. You just won't have a fear that will paralyze you in heights anymore. Now there's another way to use stones too. And that is to take, and there's some stones you don't want to do this, like cuprite and things of that nature. But cuprite is a wonderful stone for people to carry if they have osteoporosis or osteoarthritis, because it'll help build strong bones in the body. But you don't want to make a stone essence or a stone tincture out of it, because if you do, it'll calcify your esophagus when you drink the water from it.
No, that wouldn't be a good thing.
So there are certain stones that you don't want to do this with. But when it comes to making stone essences and tinctures, you can take you a clear glass bowl. It'll be able to get sunlight in through it all around. And you fill it full of water. It needs to be a fairly large bowl, okay? One that'll hold a fair amount of water.
Yeah.
And you rub your hands together, and you take the stone that you're going to use, and you charge it and ask it to release its energy into the water. And you also then you put your stone in, and you rub your hands together again, get the energy flowing again, stick your hands in the water but not touching, and just allow that energy to flow into the water, and you charge the water to receive the energy from the stone. And then you swirl your hands clockwise 3 times, because that's a motion that's putting energy into it instead of taking it away. So you do it clockwise 3 times, and then you jerk your hands out real fast. If you wind up splashing yourself because you jerk your hands out so fast, you did good. Do it real slow, all that energy will just follow your hands right back out.
Huh.
Then put you a piece of saran wrap, something again that's clear. And the nice thing with saran wrap, it's plastic. Porous. Energy can pass through it.
Uh-huh.
You put it out in the sun. And if it stays there for at least 3 hours, then it'll hold the essence of the stone there. And you can start drinking at that point. Now, the longer you keep it there, the better, the stronger it'll get. And you can still drink, as much of the water as you want every day up until about 2 weeks, and then it becomes too strong. In fact, usually people find after about a week and a half it's become too strong for them just to sit down and drink a gallon of it a day or something. They might be able to drink a glass or something, but after 2 weeks, then you put it in a jar or a bottle, and you put a tablespoon of distilled vinegar or a tablespoon of grain alcohol. I prefer the grain alcohol. It just seems to hold the energy better.
Distilled vinegar, red apple cider vinegar?
No, distilled vinegar, not raw vinegar.
Okay.
Yeah. But the best, you know, what's going to be the best with it as far as actually holding that energy is going to be just grain alcohol, like Everclear or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then you muscle test yourself to see how many drops you can use, or if you can't muscle test yourself for some reason, get somebody else checked. But muscle test for how many drops you will use and how often you will use it. You know, how many times a day or how many times a week or whatever. And then live by that. You know, just put it in the refrigerator. And like a quart jar, for instance, I've got a quart jar of stuff that's in moonstone that I use with either men who are too macho or ladies who've gotten too much into the masculine thing or whatever. And it helps them become more feminine, more able to operate with their emotions and function clearly with their emotions and stuff. You know, I actually have fun doing nasty things like take some guy real super macho and make a tea with it. And have them drink the tea. And they're like, that's kind of weird. And they try to get kind of mellow and all that stuff. So, you know, that's just one of those things that I like to pull with people. Well, so anyway, you can do that with an essence. When it comes to a tincture, you've got to have just the drops, you know, just the few drops of how many, because otherwise it's too much. Now, you can have some real interesting times with it, like kind of the amphetamine of stones is rubies.
Mm-hmm.
And, ruby will, you can take, up to about 8 drops a day of a stone tincture of ruby. But no more. And you better take it in the morning, because if you don't, you're not going to go to sleep that night.
Oh, really?
It's kind of like taking speed, you know?
Oh.
Only it's from a stone, and won't get you in trouble if you have a blood test or something. So, that's just some ideas on things. Now, there's a real good little book out called Love Is in the Earth. And I don't remember right offhand the lady who wrote it, so I can see it here. Somewhere in my office here, and anyway, it's called Love Is in the Earth, and it's a pretty good sized book, and tells you all sorts of stuff about stones as far as what they do, both spiritually and physically for you.
Love Is in the Earth. Well, a person can go on a search engine too and find it.
Oh yeah, sure. I don't know what I did with mine. It's red or something.
But the four major stones, though, to always keep is the septerion.
Yeah.
And the selenite, the kyanite, and the citrine, right?
Well, they are the four master stones. Whether you choose to always keep them with you or not, it's your business.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you're going to do any sort of energy work, you should always have those four stones available.
Well, I think they're good to have available. They're not necessarily always should be available.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's just, you know, what you need, what your client needs, or whatever. I mean, you can have all kinds of fun with stones anyway, like smoky quartz, for example. Smoky quartz will cause someone to tell the truth right then and there, just blurt it out, whether they want to or not. I'll keep smoky quartz with me when I'm counseling with people, like if I'm mediating a problem between two people.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually I'll get them together and I'll put this big chunk of smoky quartz out there between them, and all of a sudden, this person would just say something to the other one that was what they've been dancing around for all this time and stuff, and not really saying their truth, and it'll just come out, and they'll be like, why did I say that? And I'm like, well, it was the truth, was it? Well, yes, but I really didn't want to say that. And invariably, the other person will wind up responding, usually rarely emotionally, to whatever was said, and saying their truth, too. You know, and they wish they could take it back, but they can't because the real issue just got out there.
So if you don't want a whole bunch of truth coming out, you best not be wearing smoky quartz on you.
That's right. If you don't want people telling the Master Stones is that sometimes there may be something going on where you need to be a little more subtle. Like if you have Septarian around and it's in someone's energy field, then whatever drama is holding them back in life is going to come up for them. You don't necessarily want that to happen while you're doing energy work on someone.
Yeah.
And we have people do this when they're getting ready to go on a vision quest, and to do it right up to the time they go on the vision quest and take the Septarian and Sulanite with them and use it, you know, while they're on the vision quest, because it makes the vision quest so much better. And if they've been doing this for a while, like I said, I like to get someone to try, you know, if I can, I get them to commit to do their vision quest a year after they made the commitment. And if they've done this process for a year, hopefully a few times a week, then by the time they get to a vision quest, then they pretty much dealt with the problems that they were there to deal with, and they have 3 or 4 days of just nothing but visions. You know, they're real clean at that point.
Well, on the vision quest, how does a person go on a vision quest?
Well, if you want to go on one with me, then you schedule a time to do it.
Uh-huh.
And basically with a vision quest, you really need someone who's trained to hold your energy for you, because you're going to have both the White Lodge and the Dark Lodge wanting to be involved in this thing.
Okay.
You know, one to build you up, one to tear you down.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, anything that comes to you in the process of a vision quest will go through the person who's holding your energy for you. And we'll have you make what's called a self-stick, which is a stick about, you know, 18 inches long, foot to 18 inches long. And the top half of it, you know, at the very middle of it, we'll have you take a piece of red cloth, which is about protecting your energy, and wrap, you know, whatever color cord you want to around it. Then you can also stick feathers and things like that in there. You can put things on the stick and decorate the top part of the stick any way you want to represent you. And we'll make a medicine bag for you and a medicine bag for your self-stick.
Uh-huh.
When we, you know, we'll decide on the place that we're going to do it. Like, if you're an apprentice in the medicine society, then what you do is you have 7 vision quests that you'll go on, and each one has to be in a different type of terrain. So maybe once will be in the desert, once will be in the forest, in the mountains, on the beach, you know, whatever. You know, you're going to, you know, maybe in the swamp or something, you know, you're going to have 7 different vision quests, you know, in 7 different terrains.
Really?
Because there are different energies in all of those places.
Huh.
Now, it's good to pick a place that's fairly warm for your first one.
Mm-hmm.
Because all you're going to have with you are your stones. We'll let you take a journal or something. We teach you how to pray with a pipe, so you can take a pipe out and use for that. And sometimes you're allowed to have a fire, sometimes you're not. And you have 1 blanket, and you're knit.
And how long does a vision quest last?
Anywhere from 3 to 4 days.
So you're going without any food or water for 3 to 4 days, or no?
Right. Yeah, now, before you get there, for a week, for about 3 days before you get there, the only food that you're having is bread and water and raw honey.
Why bread, water, and raw honey?
Well, raw honey is actually a medicine.
Uh-huh.
And it helps to clean you out and stuff. And it provides a little bit of energy. And then bread is like... In our first initiation, for instance, we ended by taking bread and wine, and people put some energy into both of them to add their blessings to the person who's being initiated, and then we dip the bread in the wine and feed it to them. And that didn't come from the Catholic Church, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That came from 120,000 years ago. That's how long that little ritual's been going on, because bread and wine are the 2 foods that's the most easy to transmute for other things energetically. So, know, but we'll use have the bread with the person and stuff because it's going to give them a little bulk. It's going to give them a little energy and stuff, and it's also going to be able to carry a spiritual blessing and stuff for them. But then when they go out on the vision quest, we'll send them out with 5 gallons of water. Uh-huh. And sometimes the spirits will have us take one herb in the area and put it in the bottle, and you know, whatever it is their container is, so that there's sort of a tea in there. Uh-huh. Like usually out here, they'll have us put some chaparral in there, because chaparral is this magnificent blood and liver cleanser.
Uh-huh.
And it's one of the more powerful plants in the area. And so they'll have that the spirit of that plant working with them all the way through it. But a lot of times it's just plain water and no food for the 3 to 4 days that they're out there. And the spirits will tell us when we need to bring them in. But often we'll tell them, well, your vision quest is over. Pack your stuff.
Uh-huh.
And then next thing you know, we'll be there to take them down the mountain. So, and, so when you do it, though, then we also take you out and have you in a place that we call the grave. Out here, we usually put people in a cave. It's a big thing. You know, they are in the earth. And but in a lot of places, like, for instance, out around Tahlequah and Oklahoma and stuff, or up in the mountains up here around Redosa and things, and we'll have them dig about a foot down into the earth, basically a little trench that's a foot deep, a little bit longer than they are and a little wider than they are, and they will spend 4 hours in the grave and 2 hours out. And the 4 hours time in the grave, they are dealing with their spiritual issues and stuff. So, you know, in a vision quest, we've had some changes take place in the new paradigm that are real interesting, but in a vision quest overall, you'll have the first day you deal with your physical issues, the second day with your mental and emotional issues, the third day with your spiritual issues, and the fourth day you get a vision. Now, if you're doing the Sema Night in September along the way, then you've already dealt with a whole bunch of those issues before you get there. And then you have pretty much vision all the way through. You may still deal with those issues, you know, a little bit more, a little deeper, another layer or so, but you'll have vision all the way through. And so when it gets to the point that it's over with and you've got all the vision you're going to receive, then the spirits tell us and we're going to get you out. So that's how we do a vision quest. Now, I ask people for a donation of $500.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that because people are not real good at paying something if you just tell them. I've done vision quests with people for years, and people would do something like shake my hand, walk away, give me $5, give me $40, whatever. You're out there for 4 days, and you're working on the average of, if you're holding a person's energy, you would be doing stuff for them, ritually or otherwise, anywhere from 22 to 24 hours a day.
Well, it's worth it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's worth it, and then it takes you about a week to recover from it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so, you know, people have gotten where they're just not real good at gifting anymore, so I just tell them, you know, that's what I expect.
Yeah.
And, you know, it might not be all cash or something, which is basically what you need to pay bills and stuff nowadays, but it might be some gifting in the process of things and whatnot. And that's fine, too.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone ever shows up for something that I do and they don't bring tobacco, I can guarantee you they're going to have a bad time. The spirits are going to give them a bad time, and I'm going to give them a bad time. And, you know, it's an insult to the spirits if you don't bring tobacco.
Yeah, we went out, when was it, about 3 weeks ago, Brad and I, we went and bought some tobacco. You know, well, we wanted tobacco we could figure to actually use was that bugle chewing tobacco.
Yeah,
you know, tobacco. So anyhow, we went all through the forest, you know, that we go to a lot, and every place, you know, that I thought felt that, you know, the right about the energy, I went and put like a little pinch of tobacco, and we just kind of like spread it all over the woods, you know.
Yeah, you know, a great thing to do.
Well, that's what you had said, you know, that we should do it every once in a while, is just to go out there, and even if it's like once a year. Mm-hmm. You know, and what I do anymore is anytime I go out there after I leave, I always leave like a pinch of tobacco.
That's good. Mm-hmm. And anytime you pick a plant, like an herb that you're going to use yourself, give some tobacco for it.
Yeah.
Anytime you take a stone, give some tobacco for it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a couple stones that I want so bad, but I just can't take it, you know.
You'll know. You can ask for a stone, and it'll let you know real quick whether you should take it or not.
Yeah. And I look at that stone I want, and it's just like, no. And I walk away. You know, I've even hidden it, you know, kind of covered it up with some leaves and that, so, because it just seems that, you know, I just don't want anybody else taking it either.
Yeah.
You know. It's an amazing stone because it's got a hole going right through the center of it.
Oh, that's a really, you know, really powerful stone. Anytime you find a stone with a hole through it.
Yeah.
Holy stones are great. I use them a lot when I make things for people and purposes and stuff. And someone... if you're having a hard time seeing in the spirit realm, you can take a holy stone.
Hold on, we got a call coming in. Hold on.
Okay,
we're back.
Okay,
so we were... there's a hole in the stone, and you said there's a...
Having a hard time seeing in the spirit realm, then you can simply look through the hole of the stone and very often be able to see what's going on in the spirit realm around you. Another thing that's real good for is, like, you know, if you want to see little people and you're having a hard time, again, looking through a holy stone will help you see if they're there. Thirdly, if someone has lymphatic problems, it's a guarantee that the problem is not wherever it's manifesting in their body. Like, if someone has carpal tunnel syndrome, for example, the problem is not in their wrists. The problem is up at the top of the sternum where the clavicles, the collarbones come over and connect to the sternum. There are two ducts there, the right lymphatic duct and the cylindrical duct. And these are, I probably said that wrong, I forget the name sometimes. Anyway, these two ducts are there, and that's where the lymphatic system drains, and then the plasma and stuff goes back to the heart and back into the bloodstream. And the junk, you know, the mucus and stuff, goes out to the tonsils and dumps into the throat to the digestive tract can be disposed of. Well, if someone's having lymphatic system problems, they can do either of two things. They can take holy stones and put them there, and they will help to, you know, it's slow. It's real slow. It takes a long time, but they will help the lymphatic system to open up and drain properly. Another stone that works real well for that is actually a little faster than for any holy stone in general, is moss agate. And moss agate, if you have lymphatic system problems, you need to wear moss agate, you know, at the hollow in your throat, because it'll help with that. And also because it also helps overcome fear to some degree. Also, it can overcome fear. It helps you act with confidence. And then it also, is grounding for you spiritually, but won't keep you from getting out of your body and doing your spiritual work. So, you know, your moss agate's a great thing to have, but holy stones, you know, just real useful for lots of things. So, if you find a holy stone that says you can take it, by all means, do it.
Oh, I can't.
but when it comes, you know, that's what I'm saying, if it comes to a stone that says you can't, then by all means, leave it alone.
Well, it's probably there to kind of protect the area, because it's a pretty nice-sized stone. I mean, it probably goes about 10 pounds.
Yeah. Well, if you want to have a real fun time with stones, go to Hawaii.
Yeah.
Yeah, you take a stone off of Mount Pili, off the volcano there. And you are not a kahuna. I guarantee you will be cursed for as long as you live.
Really?
Yeah. Those stones do not want to go. And I mean, it's just absolute, the top of the volcanoes up there just absolutely covered with peridot. You know, wonderful stones and stuff. In fact, if you want to do healing for the earth, peridot is the stone to use. But you don't want to take those stones from there. You don't want to take any stone off of that volcano. You know, and they'll tell you, they'll make it real clear to you, you will feel bad when you pick those stones up.
Have you ever heard of, I came across, I rescued these out of a flea market, you know, one of those outdoor markets.
Mm-hmm.
There was some, I think they came from maybe like a burial place. They said that they found them here in Wisconsin. But they're like little tiny, they're very primitive looking, but they're maybe they're about an inch long, okay, but they look like little primitive statues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just made out of clay.
Yeah.
And anyhow, you know, they like just like round clumps put together pretty much, or maybe like a little nose put on it, or, you know, something. But, you know, but like I said, very, very primitive looking, you know, and made out of clay.
Yeah.
And I felt that the, when I seen them, because he was selling them, like, you know, they, you know, just, you know, like to anybody.
Yeah.
And I saw them, and I felt that maybe they were something used in some ancient ritual or something, as a person was buried. You know, maybe these like little statues or something were put on their graves or something, maybe to represent their spirit or something like that. But I've tried looking all over the internet, and I've never been able to find anything. But I had such a strong feeling about them that I went and bought up everyone he had and brought them home with me. You know, not for resale or anything, but just to have them, you know, to protect them somehow. But
yeah, and you have a couple ways you can protect them. You can keep them there in your home if you feel like that's what they want, or you can take them out and bury them in the earth.
Bury them in the earth?
Yeah.
Well, see, because I didn't know what to do with them. I just knew that they wasn't supposed to be sold at some outdoor market, you know, for, you know.
But there are general things usually that will...
Well, no, they called them... Now, what he did is he called them, let's see... hold on. I've got to bring something right here on them. Hold on. Okay, because he was selling them, because I brought this with me. But anyhow, he had on it Grandfather Stones Concretions. Concretions, formed along the shores of Lake Superior, composed of clay and sand 20,000 years ago. Popular belief, the stone had the ability to rid the owner of his or her worries. Place the grandfather stone beneath the light of the moon to cleanse. Sacred stone.
Well, the idea is that you carry them with you, and it's kind of like a worry doll.
Yeah, that's what they look like. Oh, like a worry doll.
So they take on negative energy, and then you put them out in the moon to cleanse them, and that's a different thing. That's not from a grave.
Okay, so they're not from graves.
No, that is simply for the purpose of removing stress from your body.
Okay, so I've been sitting here protecting something for 2 years now that...
That's there to protect you, yeah.
That was here to protect me. Yeah.
Well, I think that, you know.
Okay.
But there are times when you find stuff that comes from graves. Like there's a lady out here who took a couple of classes that I taught and stuff, and she was... And we'd done an herbology class, and we were going out in the desert to look at a bunch of herbs and talk with them, with the students, about how they could use them. And she and her husband came along, and we got towards the end of things up on one of the mountains out here, and she said, you know, I've got something that I've got to tell you about. It's like, okay, fine, tell me. So she says, well, 11 years ago, this girl, when I was living up in Ohio, came and said she had something that was Aztec, and she felt that she picked it up when she was down in South Central Mexico, and, you know, near where some of the Aztec pyramids had been destroyed by the Spaniards. And I just was getting this bad feeling, as she said it. She said, And this girl gave it to me because she felt like it was wrong for me to have it after she brought it back, and I haven't known what to do with it. And so I just kept it wrapped up in my garage, and I just knew you were the one to take care of it. She just thrust it in my hands and took off down the mountain. And the energy from it was so bad that it knocked me down.
Really?
And this thing was, this was a majorly, majorly angry spirit. And so I pulled a piece of red cloth out that I had in my bag that I was carrying, and I wrapped this thing up in it, and even through the red cloth, it hurt to hold it. And so I smudged it real good and everything, and then put it into a pouch that was full of sage. Then got my wife at the time, you know, Jennifer, and I told her, you know, we've got to go home now. She was going up to visit her last reading quest site and stuff, and so, you know, we took off and we got home, and I took this thing, and I started talking with the spirit of it, and what it was from a burial urn from an Aztec priest. And what they would do is they believe in having a continuity that you come back and serve your people over and over and over again, and that's true. And so what they would do to have a continuity of it is they would behead them when they died and embalm the head, and then they would burn the body and put all the ashes in the urn and then put the head in with it and, you know, put their embalming, you know, stuff in, usually things like Kripal and things of that nature in there, and in sort of a real thick syrupy tea, and they would cap it off with the cap for the bottle having a handle on it that looks kind of like a handle for a jug, and having their face on the top of it that's about an inch and a half, 2 inches around. And so, and then they would put these urns up in the temples and stuff, and when the Spaniards came, knowing that what the Aztecs intended was that this person would be reborn in 1,000 years or so and would have a connection with that energy from that time in the past and be able to work with all the energy up to that time to help their people in that day and time. And so the Spaniards took all this stuff out and had them plow it into their fields and grow the crops that they fed themselves with. And, you know, as a means of insulting their religion. And so, this kid was out wandering around in the fields and had found one and taken it to the lady, and she brought it to me, of all things. Well, normally what I would do with something like this is I would do something to appease the spirit in some way and help release it to move on with what it needed to do. And then smudge it real good and grind it into a powder and burn the powder and then mix the ashes in the earth. And in this case, though, I was having to put together a short staff to represent my position in the Asaga, and I just assumed that this is what was going to happen, and the spirit said, no, I want to be a part of your staff. I was like, what? Are you crazy? And he said, well, you know, it's already ready for me. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? And he said, well, you know that crystal you have on the end of it? Yeah. And he said, well, this piece is going to fit perfectly over that. You're kidding me. And this was, no, get your staff and try. So I get this little short staff. It's about 32 inches long and stuff. And it already had a stone on one end and this crystal on the other. And underneath the crystals, in it's a twisted piece of wood, you know, grew curled. And so, and down inside of it, underneath the crystal, there are all these sacred stones, you know, different types, and different herbs and stuff all in there. And then this crystal is set in there. And sure enough, when I slid this thing over the crystal, it fit perfectly. And so I wound up, gluing it on, and it's been a part of my staff. And what has happened with it is that it works in multiple dimensions. And so if you photograph it, for instance, I've got a bunch of photographs of it that I just took because I was sending it off to be bronzed to kind of make it a little more permanent and stuff. And there's something the spirits had said to do and stuff, and so I took these pictures of it, and they were single exposure pictures, and photographers have looked at it and said, these are not double exposures, but you can see different images of this staff in all sorts of different dimensions, different angles and stuff.
I'd love to see a picture.
Well, they're here, you know. You ever come to visit, I'll pull them out.
Okay, great.
But, that's been kind of a neat thing. And so normally, when you get these old things, then the spirits are going to have you do something like grind and burn them to release the energy totally, because fire and water are the two greatest releasers of energy that there are. And so usually what I do is I grind something up, burn it, and then put it in the earth, or pour it into a flowing stream or something like that, you know, because it just releases the energy, period. And that way that there isn't a part of that person's energy that's trapped with that thing. You know, and I'll do that with anything that, you know, someone brings me something where someone stole, you know, a pipe or anything else out of a grave.
Yeah.
Then usually that's the process, you know, grind it, burn it, put it in the earth, put water on it or something.
Well, now with these grandfather stones, then what I should do is just let, if a person has problems, then just let them have one of those and just carry it and then bury it during the full moon.
Yeah, they can just carry it with them and then they can put it out in the full moon and, you know, overnight, and it'll cleanse them.
Huh.
Cleanse them and help them be able to absorb more negative energy.
Huh. All right. I'm glad I brought that up. Okay, well, it looks like we're at the top of the hour, or bottom of the hour. I don't know, top, bottom. We're done.
Okay.
So, very interesting show tonight. I think that I would like to do more on these stones. I think that we're going to have a lot of questions on these.
Yeah. Well, it is strictly a service and nothing else, because there's certainly nothing coming in for it.
Yeah.
You know, there have been no donations in any type of any way.
Yeah, I know.
And that's just the way people are. If they can get something for nothing nowadays, they do it, which is why we've got where we charge for vision quests and stuff like that.
I understand that totally. But if a person does want to make a donation, you can find Sir Clifford's website at nasinc.org. That's
nasinc.org.
What?
It's nasinc.org.
Yeah.
NASSINC.org.
Right. And you can find him right there. And as well, of course, at burlingtonnews.net. Redesigning the Cherokee medicine way, where it'll be, I think, a little bit easier to understand and follow. And it's a very important show that we do. It's a show that isn't out there anyplace. And it can save your life. It can help you with your spiritual healing. To understand the ancient ways, we want to capture a little bit of everything with the Cherokee Medicine Way, because it's not just in the physical; it's also in the spiritual. We talk about a little of everything, because we have to understand a lot of times our past and why we do the things that we do, the path that we have to understand the path that we're taking, why we're taking that path, what we should be looking for in our future, because this is all what they call mental health, you know. So sometimes our shows are a little hodgepodge, a little this and a little of that, and then we get to the real issue at hand. But it's very important, and what Clifford is doing and taking his precious time that he has to as a gift to you, I hope that you all appreciate what he's doing here, because he doesn't have to do it. This is him doing it because this is part of his way, his Cherokee, the Saga way. And so if you people would donate, it would be appreciated, because what goes around comes around in life. And what you give out, you receive back. And so, it creates the balance. It's the circle of life, you know. So it's important. When somebody gives something freely, you get something freely back. As in donation. Okay. But anyhow, you're talking with Sir Clifford here, as well as Mary Sutherland, your host for Be With All Paranormal and UFO Radio. And this is the Cherokee Medicine Way, which can be heard every Sunday night starting at 8 o'clock on our live stream. And you're always welcome to call in or instant message us through Yahoo Instant Messenger at Burlington News. And, of course, any email that is sent to us, we forward it automatically to Clifford, and then Clifford answers it. So he is available, as well as ourselves. And remember, we are taking our time, because I don't get paid for this either, you know. And we are taking our time for you. So please, we're giving out. Bring back. Keep the circle going. You know, it's the Yasaga way. And the Cherokee way. Well, it's actually the way that it's a universal law, actually. It goes back from the beginning of
you'll
time.
You'll find it in just about every religion, too. Like, they take it to a different extreme that they really shouldn't in Christianity, where they're just saying that you give it to your preacher or whatever. But any time that you receive things, if you want to continue to receive things, then you will give something to bless others. And there's a guy named Joe Vitale who has written a number of books that deal with it, and he has kind of a little formula for it, is that wherever you're reminded of your divinity, or where you are encouraged to go for your dreams, or whoever has made you feel alive, then give to those sources. And if you do, then it's not just a stagnation where it's going to you and getting stuck in one place, and therefore it stays open and flowing, and the universe will give you more to give away.
Yeah, exactly. Because otherwise what happens is it becomes a stagnant pond. You know, you just think of it, listeners, like this. You got right now you have a flow, like a stream flowing of information, and you gather that information. Well, if you don't do something with that information, that flowing stream ends up in this pond. And if you hoard it, the pond, it after a while, it becomes still and it becomes dark, you know, and it stagnates. And that's the end of it. So to keep it healthy, keep the flow going, keep the circle moving, you know. And I can't stress to you how important that is, you know. It really is. And to think about what we said here tonight, and because we're going to give you more shows, because that's our way, you know. But you need to keep it going yourself. So contact Clifford. Because the donations, what they do is to help with the elders. You know, it's not being taken there and, you know, and used for selfish means, because you can see, I mean, Clifford has been unselfishly giving information that most people won't give out, you know. And he's doing it, and he has been doing it for some time now, you know. But show Clifford that we care, you know, and it will come back to you tenfold, you know. But anyhow, bless you all. We love you, and keep the flow going. And it was good talking to you again, Clifford. And we'll talk to you again next Sunday at 8 p.m. Central. Okay. Okay, thanks, Clifford. But there is no real exception to it. Everybody either